seriously.
Well, hello everyone. This is probably going to be my final little update video on the what is now being called the Iran-Israel War, or the 12-day war, as Donald Trump dubbed it. Everybody thought he was mad when he came out with this statement, but it does seem, as things stand, that this ceasefire is going to hold, and a few little more details have emerged about exactly what happened during this whole conflict. Now the Western, like the mainstream media, is trying to present this as some sort of victory for Israel, but as is so often the case, nothing could be further from the truth. And if you've seen the scenes from Tehran and cities around Iran, the people are actually out in the streets celebrating with fireworks, and they're declaring a massive victory over the Israeli enemy. There, obviously, Israel has come out and declared victory too, but it is obvious that this ceasefire came because Israel were running out of ammo. They were running out of specifically anti-air defense missiles, and as per reports within the Israeli government, they only had about a week left before they'd be completely defenseless. Iran did inflict a lot of damage on Israel, and as per my assessment, when this whole thing started last Tuesday, in any war of attrition between a much bigger country and a much smaller country, as was the case between Iran and Israel, there was just no way that the Israelis would be able to sustain a campaign where they're bombing each other. Yes, the Israelis inflicted some damage on the Iranians, but of course Iran is so much bigger and has so many more people and so many more facilities than Israel does, that the damage the Israelis did to the Iranians can really be chalked up as being quite superficial. Yes, people were killed. Yes, buildings were destroyed. You know, they inflicted some damage. But the damage that Iran did to Israel is magnitudes worse because of what they hit, military targets, strategic targets, and simply because Israel is only so big, right? It only has so many places that can be hit. So it is actually, you know, objectively speaking, the Iranians got the better of it. And that is why Trump was so keen to wrap up the conflict. And it seems like one of the things that has become clear is that he and the Iranians did some sort of deal where the strike on the nuclear facilities that he's currently trying to sell as being definitive and has 100% destroyed them, etc., was largely symbolic and has all the signs of being set up. For example, the anti-air, the Iranian anti-air defense seems to have been non-active, or they seem to have kind of allowed this to happen. And there are kind of telltale signs that they were tipped off, like, for example, that they moved all the stuff out, nobody was killed. And then in the retaliation on the US airbase in Qatar, everybody now knows that the Qatari government was involved, that there were back channels, and basically nobody was killed there. And the same deal, it was like kind of quid pro quo. We're going to do these two symbolic actions as a way to signal to the world that America is not going to get involved in this war. And subsequently, Trump has dropped his talk of regime change, and he's been saying and he very quickly said, well, Iran can start trading oil with China again, and that it's going to be a great trading nation, Trump's exact words, which means that clearly he thinks that he can actually work with the current authorities in Iran towards some sort of new settlement. Now, whether anybody believes him, whether anybody in the world believes Trump at this point, remains to be seen. But the whole scenario was a way of America getting out and signaling to Netanyahu and to Israel that America is not going to fight this war on its behalf. And if they don't wrap it up now, basically Iran would have, in the space of the next week or so, completely destroyed Israel's capability to defend itself. And then, of course, it would have been vulnerable to all sorts of other possibilities. Don't forget, all of the countries surrounding Israel have no love for Israel. And all it would take, I mean, the Egyptians, even though they have a paid-off government, the population of Egypt really doesn't like Israel at all. And, you know, there are all sorts of, I guess you could say, black swan events that could put Israel in a very vulnerable situation. Another problem for the Israelis, on top of the material damage that they've taken to the strategic location and the military location within Israel, is that they are suffering massive economic consequences of this as well, which they're not going to be able to sustain indefinitely, even with US aid. And then on top of that, the war with Iran had produced an emigration crisis where they're suffering from mass emigration, even though the Israeli government has banned people from leaving. They're still finding ways of leaving. They're turning up in Cyprus. They've snuck over to Sinai. They've snuck over that way into Egypt, and the Egyptian authorities are actually rounding up Israelis who fled at the moment. And this is, of course, a problem because the demographics within Israel, you know, they have, I think there's a population of 9 million, of which 2 million are Arabs, in Israel itself now, not in the West Bank or Gaza. Actual Israel has got 2 million Arab population and about 7 million Jewish population. So any kind of mass exodus is going to affect that delicate balance within the country as well. In fact, some analysts are saying at the moment that Israel is actually facing the prospect of collapse quite soon, and that Netanyahu's government is facing a lot of pressures, both internally and now, of course, with Trump's recent tirade, possibly externally too. Our support for Israel within America has absolutely cratered. I mean, I've talked earlier this week about stuff that I'm seeing up and down of my timeline, but it seems like there's been a green light. And now, like, there are so many voices who have historically held their punches or, you know, kind of avoided this topic, are now piling in and are now trying to put pressure on the Trump administration to cut ties. That's probably not going to happen, and I don't really see a future where America does kind of cut ties. But Israel's in a pretty dire situation right now, and I think you can actually see the disparity between the people jubilant, celebrating in the streets of Iran, with the, you know, and they're calling it a great victory, and the very somber tone of the Israelis. Why are they so somber? Because they thought, with their decapitation strikes in the first couple of days, with their sneak attack, with their Pearl Harbor attack on Iran, they thought that they could very quickly bring the Iranian government to its knees, cause a regime change, okay, and destroy the nuclear capabilities of Iran. They've actually failed in every single one of those aims. And counterintuitively, they have strengthened the mullahs. They've strengthened the government in Iran. How have they done that? Well, there's two ways. One, nationalist sentiment in the country. There's been a rally around the flag effect, as you're seeing, which has bolstered the government in quite a big way, because Iranians have banded together in a time of war because they were under attack. So that's the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened is that their assassinations, and it's turning out now, by the way, that some of the assassinations they claimed were not true. There's this one general who was at the celebration. They claimed he was dead. And in fact, his Wikipedia page had a death date. He was at these celebrations. So even some of the assassinations they've claimed did not actually take place, which is kind of funny. But one of the effects of the attack on the decapitation strikes is that some of the old guard who were killed have actually been replaced with younger people who are more hardline. They're more militant, okay? And there's a dynamic in Iran whereby the clerics, the mullahs, the priest class, are seen as old, and they're seen as overly cautious and not kind of militaristic enough. They're kind of very risk averse. Whereas there's a younger generation within the IRGC who are more militant, they are more martial, okay, and they are army men. And it has been widely reported in the Financial Times and elsewhere that this war massively accelerated this process, because the Ayatollah basically seconded the whole thing to these younger militant guys within the IRGC who have grown in power as a result of the last 12 days, and especially with this new nationalist fervor. So we could actually be seeing a newly strengthened, kind of more militant Iranian regime, who are now, ironically, despite what Trump is saying, hell-bent on their nuclear ambitions. Why wouldn't they be? The lesson that they've drawn, rightly, from this is that if you don't have a nuke, people will come and attack you, unlike in North Korea, as an example. So the Iranian parliament, just in the past couple of days, have had a vote on pulling out of the non-proliferation treaty and pulling out of any of those kind of conventions that allowed the IAEA inspectors in, and the cooperation that they had with the IAEA. And the argument within Iran is like, well, look, we followed all the rules. We did all the things we were meant to do. We signed up to all these international conventions, and they still bloody came and attacked us, didn't they? The Israelis still snuck attacked us, and the Americans bombed us against all international law, etc., etc. So because of that, it has actually accelerated the drive, and it's strengthened basically the right within Iran. There's been a lurch to the right, to the hardline militant right in Iran. And also this shift from the cleric class, who, if you remember, your Julius Evola, tend to be lunar and passive and, dare I say it, even feminine, to a more martial caste within Iran, who are basically represented by these young men in the IRGC, who are much more hawkish in all ways. So, yeah, it's paradoxically changed a lot of dynamics within Iranian domestic politics. Another thing is that this crown prince, this Reza Pahlavi, who was paraded around by Netanyahu and was, you know, people like Tuzi and so on were saying, oh, well, I'm going to be streaming from Tehran under the newly crowned Shah, blah, 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 blah. All these Western kind of astroturfed protests. Well, his popularity within Iran has absolutely cratered. He is now widely unpopular. And the prospects of him coming in as the leader are done. They're completely done. The idea of him coming back was about a 30-year operation. It was about 30 years of time and effort that the Israelis and the Americans had put into bolstering a network of people, a counter-elite, if you want, ready to kind of lift into Iran in case of any sort of a regime change. None of that stuff's going to happen whatsoever. The only thing I will say is that as of the recording of this, I've still not seen the Ayatollah make a statement, and he hasn't kind of come out. Maybe he's worried about being assassinated, or maybe something, I don't know. We haven't seen the Ayatollah. He has been conspicuous by his absence so far. But certainly the Iranians are feeling emboldened by all of this, and they're celebrating a victory. The Israelis are looking pretty somber. And in the American political context, all of the neocons, the Mark Levins, the Laura Loomers, the Lindsey Grahams and so on, They're moaning, they're angry, they feel betrayed, they've been blueballed basically. And really, the kind of whole Israel first thing within America has taken a real massive setback by the actions of Trump. Whether he planned this all along, or whether he reacted to events and in a more impulsive way, very difficult to say. I think that some of those people who were saying, "Oh, you should have trusted the plan all along," it's probably cope, to be honest. I feel like Trump saw how things were going, and then kind of has reacted to loud voices in his base and reacted to the reality. It kind of dawned on him. Maybe the meeting with Steve Bannon, I don't know. But it looks, I mean, to give the devil his due, it looks like this whole US bomb raid thing, Kabuki theater, strike and retaliation on the US air base by Iran, it looks like it was kind of coordinated, a little bit like the whole deal with the Soleimani thing before. So that must have had some degree of planning gone into it. And Trump is actually putting the Israelis in a difficult scenario now because he's insisting that the nuclear capability is destroyed. He is being counter-signaled by the media, by CNN, and by leaks in US intelligence suggesting otherwise. Okay. But he is insisting. So in the kayfabe of MAGA, in the kayfabe of the US administration, right, the official US government line is that the nuclear capability is destroyed. This is a very interesting development, and I don't know how that's going to play out. As I said yesterday, I don't think Netanyahu's ever going to give up if he's allowed to stay in power, but maybe a chain of events now has been set off where we could be seeing the beginning of the end of Netanyahu. It really depends on if Trump really distances himself from him now, or whether, as has often happened in the past, he somehow finds a way to get folded back in. But certainly at the moment, they've taken an almighty L. It's just a flat loss for Israel. And like I said, by all accounts, if the war had carried on another week, 10 days, Israel would have completely run out of weapons. And this is not coming from Iranian media or pro-Iranian sources. This is coming from spokespeople within the Israeli government. Their interior minister, I forget his name now, basically came out and said all of this. And they said they massively underestimated the total number of missiles that Iran had, and they massively overestimated their own defensive capabilities. So, what is the lesson of this? It was a failed attack by Israel. Israel saw an opportunity. They thought, this is our moment. They'd planned for this kind of first day decapitation strike thing. But it didn't go to plan, right? They carried out the initial success, attack was a success. What they weren't counting on was the massive retaliation. What they were not counting on was the fact that Iran had contingency plans in place to replace all of those people who were decapitated in the first place. What they were not counting on was the strength of the Iranian retaliation. And what they were counting on was the idea of dragging America into the war, and basically fighting this war on its behalf. All of those gambits failed. It all failed. It's blown up in Netanyahu's face. And he is probably going to be facing questions from his own public soon, those ones who have left or have not been allowed to leave, because, like I said at the start of the video, there's been a mass exodus. That's the information that I've seen. Also, because the war is ostensibly over, they are actually calling it the 12-day war. So, it's not actually technically a ceasefire because they haven't signed anything. They've just agreed to stop attacking each other. So that one little technicality is important, I guess. So it's not a conventional ceasefire. But they are, as things stand, the ceasefire seems to be holding. What has started to happen, though, is that because there was a complete blackout in Iran, where the internet was closed off and people weren't able to ring each other. Now people are starting to ring each other, and people within Iran who have diaspora family elsewhere are starting to ring each other and basically explain what the hell has happened, because it's been, like I said, there's been a blackout in both countries, okay? And some of the early things that have come out is that the Israelis were actually a lot less strategic than they've claimed, and were actually bombing residential areas willy-nilly. So this is like what people are telling each other. How do they know? They're like, well, the area behind my house, nothing's there apart from, you know, it's just a residential area where people live, but they flattened that area, okay? So these are the sorts of things coming out now, which means that after the initial success in the decapitation strikes in the first couple of days, which were very targeted, which were very well planned, it looks like the Israelis panicked a little bit in their subsequent retaliations against Iran, because they were kind of much more scattershot in what they were hitting and what they were trying to do after that, whereas the Iranian strikes were actually all on either military targets, Mossad targets, or on strategic kind of resource locations. So all of this information is coming out, and obviously as time goes on, in the fullness of time, we'll probably learn more and more. That goes on both sides. I imagine in Israel, there are people who are not very happy with the Netanyahu government who will be getting this sort of info out too. There'll be also, like, there'll be other people on the ground who will probably be able to kind of explain the extent of the damage there. But a lot of the things I told you have actually come directly from Israeli sources, official Israeli sources. That's why they signed the ceasefire. If they didn't sign the ceasefire, they needed a timeout, basically. They needed to refill their resources. Now, from the Iranian point of view, I maintain that it was a mistake for Iran to go for the ceasefire, because they could have basically just finished them off, finished the job. Why not? I'm always reminded of Carlito's Way. Benny Blanco from the Bronx, you had him on the ropes. Finish the job. Otherwise, Benny Blanco from the Bronx has a habit of coming back. And, you know, maybe, I mean, if I was to say, is this the end of this? It is not the end of this, especially as long as Netanyahu is in there. But even beyond Netanyahu, and this is a dynamic in both countries, right? The Netanyahu within Israeli politics, it, believe it or not, is actually a moderating voice. There are voices further to his right who are more militant. And as I just explained, the same dynamic exists in Iran, where the Ayatollah and the clerics are actually more moderate, are actually more cautious than some of the IRGC, who are more militant and are more martial in their thinking. So it could actually cause an acceleration in both countries to what you might call the hard line right, which is, again, a recipe for further conflict. At the moment, it's the summer, which means promo code Scorcher. Buy your courses at the academic agency, Foundations of Shakespeare, Foundations of Writing, Logic and Rhetoric, makes up the Trivium, Foundations of Economics, many other great courses available. Buy it now, and I'll see you later on, where I'll be doing my final stream on this Israel-Iran conflict with my good buddies Simon Roberts and Horace. See you then. It's the Academic Agency Summer Sale. Use the promo code SCORCHER. 25% off all courses. SCORCHER. Get it now. SCORCHER. 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 Promo code Scorcher. 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 Buy it now. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to
pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.